super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake. Mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who says my girls will straighten out your boys, 42nd Street Pete.
Yes, we're back with a whole new show. And, you know, tonight's not going to be more of my inane rambling because I think 2 weeks of that was enough. And I'm still wasted from Wasteland. But when we were running the Summer of Sleaze back in 2008 at the Pioneer, I met a lot of cool people. And one of these people is with us tonight. He's a student at Seton Hall University. He's going to become a lawyer, and he's sort of like, I think he's going to specialize in the entertainment industry, maybe some copyright stuff and things like that. But one of his projects was he was doing this, a paper on these foreign films that basically copied our films verbatim. So he can probably explain it a hell of a lot better than I'm explaining it right now because I'm pretty much cooked. But let's welcome Ian Friedman to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on tonight.
Oh, our pleasure, dude. Yeah, you had done that thing back. I saw it when you had the thing on YouTube, and I kept it in the back of my mind because I thought, you know, people would be interested in this stuff because people don't know how widespread this is in certain countries. But you actually, you know, you did, I guess, a paper on or a thesis on
presentation,
this whole thing?
Actually.
Yeah.
Presentation. I go to Seton Hall Law School, and the Entertainment, Sports, and Law Society and the IP Law Society, I pitched them the idea of doing a presentation about copyright infringement in foreign films. Things ranging from stolen plot ideas, say, Beyond the Door, or Jalat, the Turkish version of Death Wish, to when they steal music, every kung fu movie on the planet, and music, and also sort of the characters, and also the idea that not everything, some things that are concepts aren't actually infringement, even though we may think they are.
Yeah. Because I remember you had said that there was actually a Turkish version of Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Turkish Star Wars is really well known. There's a lot of things that got the title Turkish and the name of the movie added to them, but they're not necessarily always representative of them. I've actually seen something which I'm firmly convinced is a Turkish version of The Wild Geese. Because it at least steals the opening where Roger Moore makes the drug smuggler swallow his dope. Which actually also appears in a Chinese movie called Mercenaries from Hong Kong, where Ki Lung does the same thing. But, Turkish movies, they loved American serials, and they talked about this on Mondo Macabro's Turkish Pop Cinema DVD, and also on some of the Onar ones, that a lot of the Turkish directors grew up watching American serials, stuff like The Mysterious Dr. Satan, Republic serials, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, Commander Cody and his Lost Planet stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and they wanted to sort of remake their own version. In fact, that's the one on the Turkish Pop Cinema Double Bill is essentially, I want to say it's like a color-condensed remake of The Mysterious Dr. Satan. And I actually showed it to people who had seen it, because I still haven't seen The Mysterious Dr. Satan. I've seen a couple of Republic serials like The Masked Marvel, Manhunt, The African Journal, but I hadn't seen that one. They said, yeah, it pretty much lines up exactly like that. But so they are heavily influenced by American popular culture and also sort of the necessities of the way movie production was, like scripts. Someone joked that they used to write the script for a movie on the back of a cigarette box when they were making the film. So the big thing was that American films weren't being played in Turkey at that time, or they'd only play in limited areas. But people still sort of wanted these sort of examples of American culture, so Turkish filmmakers would, make their own version. So there's actually a Turkish Rambo and a Turkish First Blood. There's actually a Turkish I Spit on Your Grave, apparently. There's a Turkish Young Frankenstein.
Oh my God.
If there was a popular movie or trend, there's actually a Turkish remake of an Italian film, The Secret Vice of, I remember the name, Mrs. Ward.
Oh, yeah, Secret Vice of Mrs. Ward. Yeah, Wardell. Yeah. Wardell. Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually, and that one actually can get on DVD. Yeah, it's just a complete remake of it. But it wasn't something limited just to Turkey. Actually, dating back to the 1950s, there's a scene-for-scene remake of Abbing Costello Meets Frankenstein from Egypt.
Egypt? Oh, my God.
Yeah, there apparently was a problem that Egypt would remake Hollywood films that apparently... I think Tom Weaver mentioned to me once on Christopher Film Board that there are articles in Variety going back to like the 40s and stuff talking about American film companies having trying to deal with this with Turkey. I'm sorry, with Egypt. And I mean, it's mostly just because of American cinema spreading so broadly, and also other cinema such as Asian and Italian. There were a whole number of Turkish Bruce Lee knockoffs.
This stuff must be hysterical to watch.
Oh, it's great. And the cool thing about it is the action's usually enjoyable. It's not just something you watch for, like, the lulls or something of that nature. It's something that's it's fun to watch. And, like, the men are, like, they have that Bronson appeal to them, like, really manly, tough guys. Turkish Star Wars, Turkish First Blood. You know, he's probably been in hundreds of films, but he has this, like, really great leading man characteristic about himself that's really, just really easy to like about him. Even if you don't understand the language, because I'd probably say the number of Turkish films I've seen subtitled mostly come from the Greek film company Onar Films, and, like, the two from Amanda Macabro and, like, a bootleg release of Turkish Exorcist. But most of them aren't subtitled, and I think only like less than half a dozen were probably ever dubbed that got sold in America. Stuff like Lion Man, which apparently did get a video release, I think, in the U.S. I'm not exactly sure on that one. But
I think you're right, because I think I had that at one point when I was wheeling and dealing.
Yeah, and like, I think Jeanette Arkin's renamed to like Jack or something like that, where they anglicize the name.
Yeah.
But most of them, a lot of them got exported to Greece with subtitles, or occasionally to Germany, because there's a large Turkish population in Germany. So it's interesting, a lot of the videotapes I'll turn up are actually from Turkey, from Germany. But, you know, Turkey's just one example. There are tons of places that did the scene-for-scene remake, but also the barring of the Western character. There's a Pakistan movie called Samad Rushdie, where it's just insane. I've seen clips of where they like go around trying to kill Samad Rushdie for when he wrote the Satanic Verses, but they dress up like Batman. There's also a couple of Filipino Batman movies that I know of, or at least one. But the best one, the better known Indonesian examples, well, two of them, the first is Rambo, which was released also as The Intruder, and starred Peter O'Brien as Alex Tramblin. And I actually had a chance to talk with Peter O'Brien. The funny thing is, the version, if you've ever seen Rambo, it's not his actual voice. He was dubbed over by someone else. But there's actually an Indonesian version where he's played by a different actor, but the plot resembles nothing of Rambo in any way, except he literally looks like Rambo, and he has like a red headband, but... That was one of the films I talked about, that the idea that, you know, maybe this isn't infringement. And because it's just the concept of, like, a guy running around with a headband, you know, beating up people and smashing drug rings. I mean, that's not really like Rambo, depending on whatever Stallone makes for the fifth one. But, I mean, the Philippines, the First Blood probably generated hundreds of knockoff movies. If First Blood had never been made, there would be such a dearth of action movies coming out in the early 80s from the Philippines, Hong Kong, Indonesia, a couple of other countries. I've probably never even seen versions of them. And another one from Indonesia that's well known is Lady Terminator.
Oh, yeah, Lady Terminator was great. I love that film.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Over the top, man. I love it. I actually saw that over there. That was like one of last things it played. I'm trying to think of the name of the theater. It probably was the one, you know, I'm thinking, fuck, I never can remember the name of that thing. It was going up, if you're walking up the right side of 42nd Street, right coming out of Port Authority, you're walking up the right side, it was like maybe three quarters of the way up the block, and all they did was triple bills of Kung Fu, and that was in there.
And I saw I've seen pictures, not Lady Terminator, but of someone doing like a triple Kung Fu bill.
Yeah, that was the theater. That's where I saw it.
Yeah, I think it was next to, I can't remember the name.
Near the it was close to the Harris. Close to the Harris. Up on that corner, which was a sucky corner.
I cannot remember what the name of it was. But another thing that's sort of the interesting thing about Lady Terminator is that really, besides the character of an unstoppable murderous, in this case, woman, and the assault on the police station, there's really nothing to do with Terminator, story-wise.
Yeah, I know. That's what I love about it, because, like I said, that film is so nuts. I mean, you got these pot-smoking CIA agents. Then almost
the whole Queen of the South Seas.
Yeah, the whole almost semi-hardcore aspect of that. Then, you know, I love when they splice in the tsunami wave and the old man's just looking going, holy shit, that's it. I love that movie. That was great. I fell in love with that movie the first time I saw it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. I introduced a friend to it, and he just fell in love with it. He, like, wanted me to buy him and send him a copy of it, like, as soon as he left the house. He was like, you got to get me that movie. And it's really it's a fun movie. And that's sort of the thing about these things. They're usually really enjoyable movies, the ones that reincorporate American culture, European culture into their own movies. But one of the more interesting things are, Italy is probably the king of knockoffs, not necessarily scene-for-scene ones, but if a movie went big in the U.S., there was an Italian version of it. I mean, Exorcist was a really good example of Beyond the Door, and they got sued by Warner Brothers over that. I have the movie, and I got it for my presentation, but I still need to see it. It's just I've never had a chance to yet.
It's, you know, I met Richard Johnson up at Wasteland. He's pretty cool. He's like 80-something. You know, he was telling me how Zombie is one of the most watched films of all times. I didn't get a chance to hear the talk because I was doing my own talk, but I'm sure he must have brought that up, you know, being in that movie. So, that was pretty close. I don't know why, you know, well, everybody was knocking off everybody. Remember that the shark movies? Great White was
Great White still has an injunction against it.
Yeah.
It's the Swedish cover, I think it's Sweden, it was released by AW, actually says on it, transliterated roughly, the movie that Steven Spielberg banned in the United States forever, which isn't actually true. Universal sued Film Ventures and was able to get a permanent injunction granted against them, at least from the documents I read from court. The decision of it. The judge felt that it was close enough, and he ordered it for all prints and everything to be turned over to Universal. Apparently, some company was interested in licensing in the United States, and Universal told them they still have a valid injunction against it and not to even try and import it.
Huh. That's weird. Because what was the one that Castorelli's
That's great. The Last Shark and Great White are the same one. Great White.
I've seen The Last Shark.
Yeah, that's the film. Film Ventures retitled it Great White. That's why if you look in like court papers, it always refers to it as a Great White. But technically, actually, it's funny. I've seen the VHS cover for that from Japan. It says Jaws 5 on it. it's either that one. It's that one because it's either that or Bruno Mattei's Cruel Jaws. I think might actually be listed as Jaws 5, but it's one of those two, and it actually legitimately says Jaws 5 using the font. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, Escape from New York's a really good example. Escape from New York and also The Warriors to an extent. I mean, man, the knockoffs that came from that, I mean, After the Fall of New York 2019 with Michael Sotheby, great example. The one Sergio Martino did. There were just so many of those, and also just tons of them. I would say Italy, while not as well known for Turkey as doing the scene for scene remakes, they just, if it was a big American movie, there was some variation coming out of it.
They just jump on a theme and ride it right into the ground. What was the other one? 2010 Texas Gladiators, that with the Motto film?
Oh, yeah. And then there's Rome, the new Gladiators one, and the new Barbarians one. But there's also the one Fulci did, which is actually pretty decent. And I think it came before the Running Man. No, Conquest is the Conan ripoff he did. That's another good example, even though that's more of a genre type than specific movie, because that movie makes no sense. It's fun to watch. It's just very odd.
Yeah, it just doesn't
work. No, yeah, he did one. I think it was Rome, New Gladiators, something of that title. I know it's on Netflix's streaming because Troma somehow has the rights to it. I have no clue how. But they did, and it predates The Running Man. I think I checked this, and it's actually a lot of the ideas from it seem like they turn up in The Running Man. It's actually a very, very fun movie. But sort of moving on to another area that I talked about was reusing music. And it's not something that's uncommon, really. If you ever look up the original trailer for RoboCop, like the first teaser, the music it uses is all from The Terminator. And it works great. Whoever edited it did a wonderful job, like, doing the sound editing. Because you'd think the Terminator music was written directly for RoboCop. But that's an example of where RoboCop and Terminator were both owned by Orion at that time. So that's how they were able to use it. But definitely in Hong Kong, they would use music all the time. And also, footage. Footage is something that would be done in Turkey a lot. That's where all the special effects and the stuff from Turkish Star Wars comes. But Bruno Mattei, God rest his soul, one of his last movies he did, Zombies the Beginning, actually takes footage.
I didn't see that one. Yeah.
No, you have to get them from, like, Czech video companies. And that one, actually, it is out in Japan, though. It's definitely worth it. It's direct-to-video, but it's worth it. I mean, it's shot on a digital video, but the thing that's cool about it is, despite it being shot on digital video, he spliced in footage from The Hunt for Red October. You can see Viggo Mortensen in it, and the footage from Hunt for Red October is all stretched out, and it's clearly from film. So it looks all crazy. Another thing he did was, if you pause it was released at some place like Cannibal Holocaust 3, it's like Cannibal vs. Commando, I think, in Japan.
Land I got of that death. Laying around here. Yeah, Land of Death. I haven't seen that one yet. I got it laying around
here. If you hit the pause button at a certain point, you can see a still of Sylvester Stallone, because they took helicopter footage from Rambo, and they didn't remove quite enough. You have to, like, pause it, but there's a frame of Sylvester Stallone looking up still in it. it's amazing seeing stuff like that, yeah. But, you know, footage thing was mostly I've seen in Turkey. I have seen in some Hong Kong movies, but Turkey was really big on the footage thing. There's one movie where Jeanette Arkin's driving a car, and they splice in all the car stunts from Diamonds Are Forever for it.
Yeah, there was another one. I can't remember the name of the movie, but I know they stole the car crash from Thunder Road.
Yeah, a lot of footage would wind up. It was just sort of like the Turkish concept was just stock footage. It was stock footage. You just didn't pay for a license like you would in this country. But a lot of the James Bond music also winds up, both in Hong Kong and Turkey. I'd say James Bond, even though I wouldn't classify necessarily as an American film, even though, because of the way productions worked out, they're sort of British technically. Those probably someone will correct me on that. But those movies, stuff, elements from those things wind up in tons of movies. The music, there was a movie, I want to say Kung Fu Zombie with Billy Chung. When a bad guy pops out, it's the James Bond theme.
Yeah, you're right. I have that. I've seen that one.
Yeah, and another movie, Challenge of Lady Ninja. That one's actually on my YouTube account. You can probably... I'll send you the link if you want to post it somewhere or something like that. But basically, this bad guy comes in. There's a dude sitting on a chair, Chen Kuo Tai, and the lights come on, revealing him, and the guy's shocked seeing him, and they play the Imperial March from Star Wars.
That's amazing. The
Darth Vader music. Yeah. Ninja movies are full of stuff like that, too.
Yeah, I know. I've pulled, like, porn reels out, and I got music from The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, and for a few dollars more on it, I'm like,
Oh, shit.
I really hate to take it out, but what the fuck? We've left
Italian music. Yeah, Italian music wound up in tons of Kung Fu movies. Because structurally, if you look at a Kung Fu movie, a traditional Kung Fu movie, and a Western, they're similar to the point where you can easily take the plot of a Western, change it a bit, and you got a Kung Fu movie. I mean, there's a remake of Once Upon a Time in the West called Along Came the Tiger, which the director, Wong Tao, basically said, yeah, I just wanted to make my own. I just made my own version of Once Upon a Time in the West. But the music from The Big Gun Down turns up in a bunch of movies. Notably, The Secret Rivals, which that's the funny thing. I actually knew the music from The Secret Rivals before I'd ever seen The Big Gun Down itself, which is a really good movie. It's Lee Van Cleef and Thomas Milan, I think.
Yeah, it's just bad part is not available out here for some reason.
Well, yeah, Sony apparently owns the rights. I actually have seen it on TV.
Oh, yeah, that's where I see it, on the Western Channel. I have, I got it from somebody. I got the longer version. It's in Spanish.
Yeah, there's a complete Italian version, and there's people. Some guy took parts of the dub, which turned up in other places, and created, like, a mixed version that had, like, the most English, or the English language version possible, but apparently it may have just been Sony picked it up, or God, it was probably Columbia.
It was released by Columbia.
Yeah, so they may have just never dubbed those parts in, because a lot of the times, like, it'll end in mid-sentence, so, which makes me think that, I don't know if it was ever originally dubbed, if the Italian film company had Lee Van Cleef dub all of it, or it was sold beforehand. I mean, it's entirely possible. Someone, I think, told me, or a trader claimed that he has The Big Gun Down, the complete Italian left, dubbed in English. And, I mean, it's entirely possible. But, I mean, that's an example. Like, if you look up the trailer for The Secret Rivals, Secret Rivals 1 on YouTube, it uses The Big Gun Down music perfectly in the trailer. It's Ming Sun Yun, the guy who ran seasonal films, who did, like, Drunken Master, Snake and Eagle Shadow. Snake and Eagle Shadow, interestingly enough, has music from, it was that a French group. The song's called Oxygen, I think. The guy was, like, Paul Girard, or I can't pronounce French. But for the American release of it, yeah, Sony dubbed over the music. And that's sort of the thing that I spoke about during my presentation, was the issues that these can confront for distributors, because, I mean, people wanted to license or wanted to put out Turkish Star Wars. I mean, that would sell money. I mean, but the problem is, you'd have to get approval from Lucas, you'd probably have to pay them money, because the thing is, you can't really sue the original filmmakers, because usually with foreign infringement in the United States, it has to actually be sold in the U.S. in significant quantities. Bootlegging, like Turkish Star Wars, probably won't be enough. But otherwise, you have to sue them in their home country, which the chance of the process to do it, to sue someone, say, in Turkey, and the chance of recovering anything are, like, slim to none.
Yeah, that's pretty much what. Well, so that's the whole thing we were doing, the whole thing about the torrent sites, which if anybody's listening from the torrent site, it's not over, by the way. You're just not hearing nothing because we're doing stuff. So, but, you know, it's a slow and arduous process, as we all know, and sometimes you come up empty-handed, but I don't think we're going to come up empty-handed. Because I'm a dick. That's what it comes down to.
But one of the things are the ideas of licensing stuff. Like, someone actually bought the rights to Turkish Rambo. The problem is they released it, and they redubbed it with, like, a short amount of people and had, like, a new score done. But, I mean, I understand the guy's position if he doesn't want to get sued or something, but, you know, if you're going to release Turkish Rambo, part of the fun is all the stolen Rambo music. Interesting thing about a lot of times when music's stolen, it's not often as blatant as a James Bond thing. A lot of times it's the middle part of a song or of a cue or something like that, so it's not always the big blaring theme, which is why a lot of people probably never noticed it. Or at least that's what I always thought. But that's where the problem is, how do you resolve, like, these legal issues? And one thing I suggested is, for movies over a certain period, maybe say before 1989, create a general amnesty, basically where the person has to publish the movie being released, the distributor, any potential things they know of that may be infringing, but they'd have amnesty for it, as long as they comply with this process. And basically, they set a mechanical rate, sort of like when people cover songs, stuff like that, or make covers of songs, and that they'd put the money aside, and if after 3 months the film's right owners having, you know, filed a claim to get that part of the money, then they get to keep the money, and for time on, they don't, it's immune from any sort of lawsuit. I think it would be a way that would probably clear stuff up, and also it would prevent sort of moral rights issues, which really isn't an American legal concept. It's something that's in France, Europe, where an artist can sort of say, even if he doesn't own the rights to something, he can object to how it's being used, which, I mean, I doubt Ennio Morricone would care about that. He'd probably, if Ennio Morricone started getting paid stuff for all the movies that his music's been stolen in, he could probably just buy a small nation at this point.
Yeah, really.
It was just so prevalent. He could probably buy, like, a small part of a country and build his own nuclear weapon stockpile. It would just be that much money. But I think it's one of the few ways to actually approach the subject so that people can release stuff, because clearing rights can be a real pain. Really good example is The Thing, when it first came out on video, because The Thing was right at the cusp of when home video started, but they'd never purchased the rights for Stevie Wonder's Superstitious, so early video versions don't have that song.
In other words, they had purchased the rights for the movie version, but it never extended to the video version.
Right. They didn't purchase rights for in-hall media. WKRP is an example of that.
I know. They're getting screwed over with it.
Well, no, they apparently got them cheap for the show because they shot it on video. There was some way they were able to get cheap for that, but, it's a problem. I mean, nowadays, if a company doesn't want to do that, I believe there's some CBS cold case where they said it will never come out on DVD because the music rights are so expensive. A really good example on MTV was Daria, which is actually coming out on DVD. It was a really good show on, like, Beavis and Butthead in, like, the 90s. But the problem is, and this actually relates to Beavis and Butthead, too, is for Daria, a lot of the music they used was popular music, Radiohead at one point, stuff like that. So the version that's coming out on DVD won't have, like, any background music. They didn't even hire someone to, replace it. It's just dead sound or lack of music, including times when it works for a gag, a gag like they did with the R.E.M. song, Everyone Hurts. They do a parody of it, but the problem is that when you see the version they're going to release, it's just generic music playing, so it kills the joke. That's also why, like, Beavis and Butthead, they can release the cartoons themselves, but they can't release the music videos.
Yeah.
Of them talking about. But they can show them on TV as much as they want. And the same with Daria. That's sort of the ironic thing, is, like, it can be shown on TV tons of times because the license allows for it, but since it never translated to home video, unfortunately you can't see it, and that's sort of the problem. With the suggestion I was proposing, is I think the answer is just licensees and the people who own the rights need to sort of become realistic. Because I read that Miami Vice, apparently clearing the music for the first season cost close to $1 million, which sounds crazy. I mean, that could be wrong, but I remember reading that somewhere.
No, you're probably right, because it's out of control with some of this shit. It gets to the point it's ridiculous, because that's probably the reason there's a lot of old films that we know that are, like, waiting in the wings, for lack of better words, that aren't getting released because, the music rights are unrealistic and some of the other rights are unrealistic. I mean, somebody was paid for this years ago. I go through this myself with certain things where,
You have to understand for some things that, they were paid for, but for certain things where they were stolen, they were never paid for in, like, the first place. A lot of, like, foreign things, but no, I'm sorry, continue.
No, it's like, I go through this all the time with, trying to, like, whenever I'm going to release something, I really have to track everything down and make sure all my, T's are crossed and my I's are dotted and stuff, because I don't need the headache of that. And if, we've had to remove, certain sound elements from the films, and we've taken some heat on the internet, but, it's either we remove them or we don't release the film. It's that simple. We have no choice in the matter. They're not going to release us the theme, the Jaws or Psycho or anything like that. They're just not going to do it.
Yeah, that's the problem. I always wondered, though, some of them, I always thought it would be funny. That's why I sort of proposed that moral rights concept, being able to do that, because I could see, some artists would object to their use in this movie. But the American system is always about getting paid, which works. It's not about the rights of the artist. It's about people getting money and property. And I think that should be the goal, not some whether they don't like it being used in some kung fu movie. It should be, you're going to be compensated for it. Well, that's the important part. But Yeah, Witchfinder General, the Vincent Price movie, I don't know the complete thing about, but I know that got released with another score. And actually, the Return of the Abominable Dr. Fibes, I never knew this because the first time I saw it was on MGM, but I had no clue that every video version prior to that had Vincent Price singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow cut. Which must be horrible because it's incredible when you haven't seen that before, and then Vincent Price just starts belting out Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Damn, I never saw that one.
Yeah, it's the second Fives one.
Yeah, I had seen, let me see. I saw Witchfinder General as the Conqueror Worm. I saw it in the movies, and I know that it was one of those films that, like, you know, really impacted me because it was Price not being Price. Because Price always had that little humor undertone in anything he did. Well, he didn't have it in this. So, yeah, and it, like, I remembered the film, like, verbatim, and when I picked up the VHS tape the first time it came out, I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this shit? Then I had read that they had, you know, couldn't use the music and stuff, and I had also read that that's the reason a lot of the AIP stuff is held up, too, where it's not released in this country.
Yeah, that's entirely possible, because, trying to think, like, a lot of them had pop singers doing stuff in it, but, I mean, a good example would be the fiasco that happened with The Fugitive, where they didn't tell anyone, they released the second season on DVD, and it was completely redone music, and they got enough crap for it, they had to go back, apparently they cleared the rights. The rights were apparently, it was stock music a lot of times, too, ironically, but the ownership of it, the title of the songs, wasn't clear. There wasn't a clear chain of title for some reason because of libraries being bought over time, stuff like that. And that was they got such huge flack, they actually apparently went back and cleared the stuff and offered people replacements because if people took screenshots, it actually said on the they added it onto the title screen under the original music they had. It says, like, new music recorded by, you know. It sucks when that happens. I mean, if you're a film fan, you're also generally a film music fan. You appreciate the importance of music in it because, I mean, can you imagine a Godzilla movie without the Godzilla theme or a Rambo movie without the Rambo theme? It just kills the picture.
Yeah, well, here's one for you, even going weirder than that. When the whole thing with WWE buying ECW and releasing their footage.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like watching this and I'm going, you know, why am I not into this? And it dawned on me, the music, because, you know, certain guys, their music played through the whole thing while they were beating the fuck out of each other. And it's
The WWE library is a mess in terms of copyright because of problems they inherited, because the original guys never paid to clear the music. Bill Watts didn't pay to clear it. Like, I have Bill, I do not believe he probably cleared it. Just based on cost and stuff like that, because the JYD's theme song was Another One Bites the Dust by Queen.
Yeah.
Terry Von Erich, I think, was Monday Warrior.
We Are the Champions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
No, they could get, you know what it was? They got away with it because they figured, you know, the one thing, too, is you got to understand, a lot of these rock guys were big wrestling fans, and sometimes they just let, you know, like, the guy from, Billy Corgan from Smashing Pumpkins. At one time, it was rumored he wanted to buy ECW, and so did Rob Zombie. So a lot of these guys are, like, really big fans, and, like, they give them a lot of leeway to do shit.
Yeah, that's part of it, but it's just crazy, some of the stuff that they have to deal with. And they also have that long-standing lawsuit with the World Wildlife Federation, which is why they blur out that the Scratch logo that was used.
I got two friends of mine. That's their job. That's what they do for a living. They go through all the footage and blur that out. I'm like, holy shit.
even more of the music, all the stuff, when McMahon bought WCW, he got one of the best deals ever because he got Jim Crockett's entire library, which included WCW, but also
NWA, Mid-Atlantic Pro, well, you had all that shit, Georgia. And you know the killer part is, they don't, well, I guess, you know, I don't subscribe to the cable thing where at the 24/7 thing, because maybe it's on there, but maybe. Damn, I remember this shit. He just bought the Florida library, too, from Mike Grainfire.
Yeah, and I've seen some of the Florida library, actually. Yeah, here's a good example. What was his name? He was married to Kevin Sullivan. His music comes out is the Twilight Zone theme.
Yeah.
I've seen a clip of that where he just beats some jobber senseless, but I mean, that's a huge headache for McMahon. I mean, regardless of what you say about Vince McMahon, I mean, buying those libraries was really a great way to get content for really cheap prices, but they have to edit a lot of the music out, introduction, stuff like that. That's the worst thing, because intros, like the intros for a lot of wrestlers were what made it. I mean, like, to the best of my knowledge, I think Demolition's theme is cut from a lot of stuff. Slick's theme, if he was managing someone's usually cut. There's a lot of, like, WWF themes that, for one reason, aren't used. Because they just don't want to repay the people for it, or they want too much money.
Well, there was a whole deal. You know what really, I don't know if you know this story, you know what really fucked them on the Sandman's deal? Years ago, Metallica offered to play at a WrestleMania or something like that, and McMahon blew them off because they didn't, who are these people? They're nobodies. I don't know who they are. And they remembered that. So when he got the Sandman, when they signed all them guys, he talked to the Metallica people, and they go, okay, we want like $2 million for the rights to use the song. Guess what? We can't do that shit. You know?
It did get cleared once for that one night only pay-per-view. If you see the live version, it's dubbed over in the taped one, but Paul Heyman was big on clearing all the music, apparently, for that thing. But that's an interesting sort of side thing. That it's, these films really aren't confined to just like foreign movies or adult movies, stuff like that, but like wrestling stuff. I mean, it's probably also, I've always wondered if it was things playing on the back of announcements, but it's taken the longest time for like the NFL, baseball to start releasing older games, even though it's a market that makes sense. Because I got my parents like the 1980 NFC Championship game they went to where the Eagles beat the Cowboys. And for like the longest time, you'd have to find some shady sports collector dude to buy like some eighth generation dub of a tape for. So it's interesting. I've always wondered if possibly announcements or music playing over PAs was the reason that it took so long for them to release some stuff. It's possible, but it wasn't in conditions that were acceptable.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of this stuff, you know, it's funny because even Bill Lustig, he's releasing some of the old Al Goldstein Midnight Blue stuff, and they got the original ads that were on TV, and he's got the phone numbers blurred out. Those are great.
Those ads are hilarious. Somebody showed me a YouTube clip of them, and the funniest thing is I think it was one ad they showed for some sort of, you know, swingers club or something like that, and the people had like this really thick Queens accent, and they were like dressed up in like this disco wear, and I showed it to a bunch of people. It was just hilariously.
That's the way it was. It was probably Play-Dohs or something.
Yeah, but it was just so funny because it was just an ad these two people took out looking for other people to have, you know, relationships with. And it was just also the outfits. And then the number at the bottom of the screen. That's not a side of copyright, so to speak, but that's one of the things sort of with clearances, like where stuff has trouble getting released because they're afraid someone might sue over something. Like, if you ever, like, the Transformers, they put the animated movie from '86 out on DVD. And one of the special features was old toy ads. All the kids are blurred out in the ads, which makes it look really creepy. It looks like something, it's like evidence from some, like, assault case or something. It's really just, it's cool seeing the toy ads, but the kids are blurred out, like, in an episode of America's Most Wanted or something.
Maybe that's why Mike Vraney stopped selling a lot of that shit, too, because maybe he was getting problems over that. He was selling, you know, all those TV ads and shit and all that.
Well, didn't he have problems, like, the original way that he met David Friedman was that Friedman found out that he was selling his stuff.
Yeah, pretty much.
And he was exceptionally pissed off about it. Yeah. Or so I've heard over time.
Yeah, that's the story. I never asked Dave one way or another. It's none of my business, but I think they just came. I honestly think that Dave didn't think there was any money to be made in the stuff at that point.
Yeah. I think how it got resolved, like going back to what I was talking about, making the deal, you know, people can find a way that every party can make money. You're not going to maybe get, say, you know, a ton of money, which is what the problem people think, like, oh, I've been wronged or something like that. They have. Yeah. They've legitimately had stuff stolen from them. I can't blame somebody for being upset for that. But at the same point, suing them, you're not going to get the money back. If you find a way to make a deal, the only problem is that a lot of cheapskate guys, even if the people are offering a reasonable deal, will just dub it over and be like, yeah, I'm not paying you anything.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem on sort of the distributor end is they sort of rather cheap it out. And then fans are the people who lose out because in the end, you know, they have to either buy a compromised product or they go and buy it from a bootlegger, which doesn't help anyone because that's money that no one gets. That's except the bootlegger. It doesn't go to the people who want to release it or the rights owners. And, you know, I just think that based on the ideas of licensing, stuff like that, that, you know, there's ways for people to get money. Like I said, I'd love Ennio Morricone to just suddenly start getting, like, checks. I mean, but he's been making money, though, off Quentin Tarantino for years, though, with all the licensing, stuff like that. I think they actually just released an entire CD of Morricone, re-recorded a bunch of stuff that Tarantino apparently used in films, which actually sort of leads me to a funny thing about Tarantino is that a lot of people don't realize, very mainstream people, most cult fans do realize this, is that when they talk about Tarantino's use of music and stuff, that all he's doing is really just doing what Cheng Che did back in the 70s with the Kung Fu movies. I mean, Vengeance. It was released here as Kung Fu Vengeance. Great movie. I'm actually looking in my apartment straight at the movie poster right now. A lot of the show's music would be the Wolf Library cues, but that movie has music from Diamonds Are Forever in it, and it works out great. That's the funny thing is people, we always think of the hilarious examples of bad music stealing, but a lot of times it worked really well, especially if Kung Fu movies. Sometimes, especially if you see a copy of worn out sound, it doesn't go well, but it does it right. It is just perfect because they work perfectly. Invincible Armor has a lot of music from I think Day of Anger. Yeah, Day of Anger with Lee Van Cleef. That's another example where I've never seen Day of Anger. I've heard the music a ton of times, but I've only seen it because of a Kung Fu movie.
It's hard to get now. I think it's out of print.
Yeah, I think Wild East put it out.
Yeah, I was friendly with Eric Marché when I was in New York, who was really big on this stuff and actually was in Italy for a while and talked to these people. And they had gotten, I think it was Julia Gemma to do the commentary on it. And the whole deal was that the American version was missing 20 minutes off the beginning. Complete 20 minutes gone. And they were supposed to make some deal to get it, and it was supposed to be in English, and it wasn't. So they basically had to build a track and put it in. So
that was
one of the first things they did. They put a lot of stuff out. I didn't realize how much stuff they put out. I snagged some of it off Amazon, but a lot of it's gone now. Completely out.
Yeah, no, they put out they even put out a Eurospy and a couple of Euro War movies with one or two of Kinski in them.
Yeah.
Stuff like that sort of like, that's another problem is just tracking down existing footage, but sort of going back to the music thing. I will give an example of where it doesn't work well, and people should check this out. Search Nigerian Titanic. Somebody in Nigeria made a version of Titanic on camcorder, because that's how in Nigeria they use camcorders, because you can't make a profit enough to shoot it on celluloid or anything, but it's a profitable industry. And it, funny enough, most of, but not all, and actually this clip wasn't, are in English, based on sort of... because Britain ran Nigeria as a colonial colony, stuff like that, but also just because it's easier to export. But Nigerian Titanic, this dude takes all the footage from Titanic, special effects footage, and splices all the white people out of it, and shoots stuff with these guys on it, on like a sailboat somewhere in Nigeria, and it shows like the White Star Line meeting, and I think one guy says, "May Allah bless the White Star Line." I think that's what the subtitles say. And, like, they're sitting at someone's kitchen table, and this is, like, a White Star Line meeting. And they show, like, the dude's doing the woo thing off the side of the balcony. It goes on for, like, 3 minutes, and it's clearly they're hanging off of, like, some dude's sailboat. And then it cuts to a woman, like, the woman who plays, like, the Rose character, singing I believe it's in Hasu, a Hasu version of My Heart Will Go On.
Wow, that's crazy. You know, that's almost like the Turkish Star Wars.
I'm here.
I would actually rate it higher than the Turkish Star Wars, because Star Wars is something fun and great, and you'd enjoy watching it. Hearing Celine Dion sung in Nigeria in Hasu is not, I mean, Like, my wife hates Celine Dion. Like, if she's in the store and Celine Dion's playing, she'll actually leave the store. She hates Celine Dion that much. I mean, and I don't blame her. The woman's awful sounding and terrifying looking. But it's just because the music video of the woman singing is, and she's wearing different outfits. It looks like some low budget early 1980s, maybe late 80s, early 90s music video, where it's literally people shooting them on camcorders and people standing in front of a green screen. It is hilarious. And they show, like, the ship sinking at the end, and when it says RMS Titanic, they superimpose something on it in bright Nigeria. And it's popping up and down. It's like someone trying to blur something out, and you can see the, because the vibration, it says, like, Nigeria over and moving around and stuff. And it's just, seriously, I think all you have to do is YouTube Nigerian Titanic. I have an abridged version of it, but there's not a full version of the movie. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to track it down no matter how I've tried, though. Apparently, one guy has a copy, but he will not trade it. I've been trying to get it for a long time, but it's a crazy clip. And related to that is sort of the Russian version. There's a scene-for-scene remake of Commando that was released in Russia in 2000. Then within the last 4 years, I had a Russian DVD of it, and it's a total scene-for-scene remake. Some scenes played a little differently for comedy, but total scene-for-scene remake of Mark Lester's Commando.
I love that stuff. And, you know, you were mentioning about the music, and one of the things I noticed was, like, in some of the Asian stuff, like Centipede Horror, like, half of the music is from Nightmare on Elm Street. A lot of those movies were doing that at the time.
Oh, yeah, the practice continued, I would say... early 80s marginal stuff definitely would have it. Mercenaries from Hong Kong, a Shaw Brothers movie, I've seen, has little parts of Rambo in it. The music, not the main thing, but parts of it. And I didn't even realize that Mercenaries from Hong Kong is a great movie.
Yeah.
Along with, if I can just pimp one movie release that's coming out, it's Hong Kong Godfathers. There's a review up for it on my site, hkfilmnews.blogspot.com. It's a movie I've been championing for years. It finally came out completely uncut, and, like, full-front nudity popped up in the uncut version, tons more violence and dismemberments. It's a great kung fu movie. You can see, like, an edited version of the final fight on my YouTube channel, but it's worth picking up. It came out dirt cheap from Funimation. It was one of those things that BCI was supposed to release before it came out. Cliff McMillan did, like, the original, the restoration on it. And he did a great job. It's a shame that they closed and he never got to come out under his watch so he could get the credit he deserved for it. But, I'd say it stops around the 90s. It pops up in weirder things on the side a little, but I'd say the mid-80s is when it sort of starts fading out, partially because you don't have the traditional kung fu movies a lot, and a lot of times, you know, they're hiring people to do original scores, but... Actually, two notable John Woo examples. John Woo's A Better Tomorrow has a small piece of Peter Gabriel's theme, Birdie's Flood, in it, which I couldn't find out for years what the hell it was. And there was a website that said, Birdie's Flood. And I was just like, I seriously was about to start doing jumping jacks. Because it's the coolest piece of music, and it's not on the soundtrack release that came out in Japan. And it was just great finally figuring out that it is. But John Woo's The Killer, mostly a really good original score by Lowell Lowe. But the part during the Dragon Boat race, and if you actually check out the Hong Kong trailer for The Killer, James Horner's score for Red Heat. And it works perfectly. I mean, if you've ever seen the Dragon Boat assassination scene in The Killer, it's edited perfectly. If somebody didn't tell you that that's from James Horner's score for Red Heat and possibly played you a sample, you wouldn't know. But it really peters out around then because of Hong Kong cinema being exported more, being well-known, to an example. I mean, it was well-known... like Warner's release, Five Fingers Up, stuff like that. But I think it's just the issues from it started to become possibly more apparent. And it was just cheaper at that point, and easier just to hire people to do scores. But it's all over the place. Like the theme for the Shaw Brothers movie, Bloody Parrot, and I didn't realize this the first time I watched it, is actually the theme from Mad Max.
Wow. That is
funny. And I played it for people in a school. I'm like, does this theme sound familiar? One kid was like, it sounds familiar. I had no clue where it's from. I played like the opening of Mad Max. It's like, and people were just sort of like, they're picking their jaws up. Not as much after I played the Nigerian Titanic clip. That seriously will send people into convulsions from laughing because it's so awful. It is just, it's so it's like it's, you've been touched by God. It's that awful, the beauty of it.
Shit. How are we doing on time, Todd?
Time-wise, we've got about 4 minutes.
Oh, shit, I need a couple minutes. Yeah.
Well, I'll just wrap up then. But there's a lot of cool stuff to check out if you're into that things. And, you know, there's also ways that potentially can be solved for home video releases, but parties just need to sort of be willing and realistic.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Oh, yeah. Dude, it was my pleasure. It's long overdue. Sorry a couple times we got screwed up, but we finally got you on, and I want to thank you for coming on, and wish you the best. I guess you're graduating, May?
May 28th, and then just studying to take the New York bar for the rest of the summer.
Ah, wow. Cool. Well, yeah. We wish you the best, and, you know, maybe we'll get you back on before, you know, you take off and, you know, make a career of this and start charging us money and shit, you know?
Nah, always free for you guys. Thank you again.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you very much.
No problem. Right. Take care, guys.
You too. Take care. That was pretty interesting. I mean, you know, we talk about a lot of stuff here, but, you know, here's a guy who, you know, is going to probably make a hell of a lawyer, or a lot, you know, better than probably the ones we got representing us. You know, maybe we should consider switching when he passes the bar. What the fuck, you know, keep us out of trouble. So, yeah, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate that. We appreciate all your insight to that stuff, too. It was pretty cool. There is a convention coming up in your neighborhood, April 30th and May 2nd.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you know about that. It's called Contamination 2010. Dave Dyer is the promoter. He's a big fan. It's called Dire Straits Productions. And they got a hell of a, you know, thing going. They have a party going on, Atomic Cowboy. And they got a lot of guests. Let me see if I can navigate this thing, as stoned as I might be. We'll go under celebrities. And actually, I was invited down there. And what happened was, just health and personal problems in general. I couldn't do it, and I didn't want to hang anybody up, so I had to cancel out. But, you know, don't let that stop you, because check this out. You've got the Batmobile. William Forsythe from Rob Zombie's Halloween and the Devil's Rejects. My good buddy Gary Clark Steele from Day of the Dead will be there, as well as Joe Pilato, Captain Rhodes from Day of the Dead. Then we got Anthony DeLito as Miguel from Day. This is the 25th anniversary, actually, if nobody's picked up on that already. I didn't think I'd have to tell you, but Lori Cardile, Day of the Dead. Mark Thurno is the Beef Treat Zombie from Day of the Dead. And, of course, what convention wouldn't be complete without Tom Savini? Guess who else is going to... Your buddy's coming back. Fred the Hammer Williamson's going to be there.
Really?
We had the pleasure of meeting Fred up at Wasteland last year.
Hell yeah.
Fred's a cool guy. Yeah.
Well, I didn't even know he was going to be there.
I didn't know either. I just figured let me announce this, because I wanted to get Dave on. We've been so screwed up with the scheduling and everything. I figured, you know, let me tell some people about this. And our other good buddy, John Russo from Night of the Living Dead, screenwriter and zombie, and another good friend of ours, Bill Heinzman.
Yeah.
The Cemetery Zombie. Russ Striner, who was on a couple, you know, weeks ago. George Cassana. Kira, sweetheart that she is. I just saw her up at Cinema Wasteland. Belinda Belansky from The Howling. There's one. And Dee Wallace. First time with Belinda back in St. Louis.
Wow.
Yeah. It's going to be a great show. An adult film legend, Sika, born queen of the world.
Yeah, this has like changed. Last time I looked at it, there was not near this many people.
Yeah, this is great stuff. The Soup Nazi, Harry Manfredini, composer from Friday the 13th. Ari Lehman's going to be here. Ari's always cool to hang out with. Had a lot of fun with Ari. Whole bunch of stuff going on. I love hanging out with some of these people. Bill Forsythe's great. He's great. Gary Clark, one of the best. I mean, these people are fun to hang out with.
Well, yeah, a lot of our friends are going to be there, damn it.
Yeah. And tell Dave 42nd Street Pete says hello, and I hope to be down there next year when you do this all over again, because I'm sure you will. So that's that. And a couple shout-outs to Beverly Kennedy, my friend on Facebook, who's a really cool lady. And David and Melissa, and I apologize. I have no fucking clue who Heather is. This must have been one of my twisted, drunken fucking fantasies. Rip and Rob, you should go to this convention. It's right down in your neighborhood too. You know, I know you're just probably, you can't be spent out already. You get paid in May. Kudos to Rob Van Dam, won the TNA World Heavyweight Championship Monday night, and a complete surprise to me, because I was completely fucking flabbergasted by this, because I actually did something right for a change. So again, Contamination. Go see it. And that's all we got for now. Again, thanks to Ian Friedman for enlightening us about all this wonderful stuff. Thanks to Todd for, like, disappearing for fucking 45 minutes.
I did not. I was here. I just didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah. And thanks to you guys for tuning in. Until next time, stay sick.
Second Street Pete's Grindhouse is a production of Jackalope 105 FM.
Do you feel that? Oh, shit. Oh, wah-ah-ah-ah. Oh, wah-ah-ah-ah. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Madness is the gift that has been given to me. I can see inside you the sickness is rising. It seems that all that was good has died. Oh no, the world is a scary place. Now that you've woken up the demon in me.
Bobby, will you give it to me?
2, 3, 4.
Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Why can't you just fuck up and die? Get down with the sickness. Fuck you, I don't need this shit. I'm down with the sickness. You stupid, sadistic, abusive fucking organ. Down with the sickness. Here it comes.
Here we go again, motherfucker, yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on down and see the idiot right here. Too fucked to beg and not afraid to care. What's the matter with calamity anyway? Right, get the fuck out of my face. Understand I can't feel anything. It isn't like I wanna sift through the decay. I feel like a wound, like I got a fucking gun against my head. You live when I'm dead. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. Come on. Now, so fuck it. Blood on my face and my hands, I don't know why. I'm not afraid to cry, but that is none of your business. Overdo it, don't tell me you blew it. Stop your bitching and fight your way through it. I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit. People equal shit. People